Time magazine has included Charles and David Koch in its list of most influential people in America, and according to Forbes, their conglomerate, Koch Industries, is the second largest privately held company by revenue in the United States. Recently, they have come under attack from Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid as part of this year's Democratic Party election strategy, which accuses the wealthy conservative brothers of being un-American and trying to buy elections. Despite all the stories in the press, a recent poll reveals that 52% of Americans don't even know who the Kochs are, and another 11% have no opinion about them. Joining us now is ProPublica reporter Kim Barker, who's written extensively about dark money and the Koch network, a complex opaque web of nonprofits nicknamed the Kochtopus that has raised many of the dollars for conservative political candidates. And I'm very pleased to welcome Kim back to our show. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
What is dark money?
Dark money is the shorthand term for these groups, these nonprofits that are allowed to spend money on elections without reporting their donors. Therefore, their donors are dark. And it's very opaque. And it was allowed before the Supreme Court Citizens United decision about 4 years ago. But it's just exploded since then.
And you describe the Koch network as including 12 nonprofits, 11 of which were classified as social welfare nonprofits, one a trade association. What do all these groups have in common? Why do they need so many?
Well, you'd have to ask them that, because they're not really talking about the network. But if you look at what each group is supposed to do, each group has a very specific goal or a target. For instance, you've got Libra Initiative that targets Latina voters. You've got a group like CHR for Trust that targets Christians. In a lot of these different groups sort of go after a different demographic that they're trying to do.
And they're all headed by Koch allies?
Yeah. All of them are headed by Koch allies. You also have this thing with these groups that's very different than other dark money groups that have been active in elections. And here's where it's going to get confusing. All of it's confusing, but you get to this idea that these groups have something called disregarded entities. Now, these are limited liability companies, usually that have strings of letters like T-O-H-E, you know, or A-S-M-I, something like that, that make no sense whatsoever to us. I'm convinced there's a code someplace that says what all of these stand for, but I haven't yet found it. So you've got these disregarded entities that are considered to be part of the groups for tax purposes. And a lot of the money, that, at least in the 2012 election, passed through these disregarded entities as opposed to being given directly to the nonprofits themselves.
And they call it called disregarded entities?
Yeah, they're disregarded for tax purposes. And then you've got, at the same time, these groups. We've been able to get the applications for several of the groups from the IRS. We're still waiting on others. The IRS takes a fairly long time. If anybody from the IRS is listening, I would like those responses to my request to be fulfilled at some point soon. But we were able to look at some of the applications, and we could find out that 9 of these groups have been formed as trusts, which is incredibly unusual. It's very unusual to have a social welfare organization that's been formed not as a not-for-profit corporation, but as a trust instead. And all of these trust agreements, which are all filed in Delaware, which is sort of where LLCs and corporations, you know, go to die. You know?
And most banks are based in Delaware as well.
Yeah. It's very friendly for corporations, for nonprofits, for LLCs. And it's also a way to be able to disguise who's actually in charge. So with these particular trusts, they've all got these strangely named LLCs, you know, that can get rid of whoever's running the trust with no reason whatsoever.
You write that it's not entirely clear why the Kochs added these LLCs as another level of complexity to it, an already opaque setup. Is this just about making it more difficult to track the money, or a matter of control?
I think it's both. I think it's both. And that's what all the experts who had never seen any sort of structure like this. We had to talk to experts in LLCs and in trusts and nonprofits to try to get a sense. And as best as anybody could tell, it's about the idea that you can further obscure donations. It can make donors feel better. You know, you tell a donor, oh, we would like you to give to this group, but and it's a corporation and they're a little bit nervous about a check being left around, and you say, oh, don't worry, you don't have to write the name of this group, say Americans for Prosperity or the Center to Protect Patient Rights groups that have been a little bit controversial in the recent years. Instead, you can write it to some LLC called, like, Cactus Wren LLC. So it's that. That's one reason.
And then that money gets moved to Americans for Prosperity?
Money would go to Center to Protect Patient Rights. But yes, you know, as soon as you give to the disregarded entity, it then is part of the nonprofit. This is how confusing it is. And then another major reason is control, because the whole idea of who's behind these disregarded entities can exert control over what the organization actually does. And also with the trusts, obviously, they can get rid of anybody if they don't like what they're doing.
Do we have any sense of how much money flowed through disregarded entities in the 2012 election cycle?
We know that more than $204 million flowed from the nonprofits. And this is, again, where it gets confusing, because you have to look at the Coctopus almost like a pyramid. And you have had a couple groups at the top, and they flowed money, and everything flowed through. And we can say that of that money, $204 million, that's million dollars went through these disregarded entities and then into the nonprofits themselves.
It's been argued that the Koch's money was instrumental in assisting Republicans in taking the House in 2010 during the midterm elections. What makes their approach so much more effective than other wealthy donors?
Well, I would say in 2010, you can't just credit the Koch's money for changing the House. I think that Obama and the Democrats were incredibly unpopular. So I think that there was a lot of factors going on in 2010. There was also most definitely Karl Rove's dark money group, Crossroads GPS, and his super PAC that had come along. And the conservatives and the Republicans really marshaled the whole idea of the fallout of Citizens United much, much, much better than the Democrats. In 2012, you could make the argument, all that money, all that dark money didn't do anything. And that's what brings us to 2014.
Well, I'm sure that the fear is that something similar will happen during this cycle.
Exactly.
The reason that Harry Reid and a number of Democratic groups are now going after the Kochs and naming them
not just publicly, but, you know, I'm on all these different lists for raising money for both conservative and liberal groups. And almost every single one of the Democratic groups, it's like they're reading from the same script. It's, you know, the evil Koch brothers, give money because of the evil Koch brothers, and they're really setting them up as some sort of boogeyman. But then if you look at the spending that's happened so far, and a lot of the spending is very difficult to track, because you're talking about issue ads, you know, these vague sort of ads that I think if any average person were to see them on TV, they would say that's a political ad. These are the ads you see that are like, you know, Obamacare is horrible, it's awful, you know, there's death panels, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Call this congressman and tell them you don't like what they're doing. Tell them to vote against Obamacare, even though there isn't a vote like that.
There have been 50-something votes like that.
Well, yeah, right. But there isn't one that's exactly right now. You know, these are very clever sort of issue ads that don't have to be reported to the FEC.
And we're also seeing ads that I think the Kochs have put together in which people say, I am being hurt by Obamacare.
Yes. Yes, yes. And it's all about Obamacare so far. And their estimates range between $25 million and $30 million that they've spent so far this year, groups like Americans for Prosperity primarily.
Because they think that Obamacare, despite the fact that it's not going to be repealed anytime soon, is still what will hurt the Democrats in the next election?
I think it's a couple of reasons. I honestly feel like they really believe that they can get rid of Obamacare, and that if they just change the makeup of Congress, they'll be able to do it at some point.
And why would the Kochs care?
They don't like Obamacare. They don't like regulation like that. They don't want the government regulating health care. They are all about libertarian, free market, pro-business, less regulation ideas. And so for them, Obamacare is the antithesis of anything they would want.
Charles Koch told a reporter recently that somebody has got to work to save the country and preserve a system of opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
They're true believers.
I mean, I think they really believe in what they're doing and that what they're doing is best for this country. And they definitely are not alone. They have these retreats, semi-annual retreats, where they invite like-minded billionaires and millionaires, usually to these mountain hotels, and no media is allowed there. And you've got to have a name tag at all times, and you can't tweet, and you can't say what's discussed.
But they raise money there.
Yeah, exactly. A fight club for billionaires. And you know, this is where they're able to raise money and get people to give to their causes. And then these people then in turn trust that the Kochs in the network are going to spend the money in the best way possible.
One retreat attendee you spoke with said the Kochs are not in this for any personal gain whatsoever, as all they seem to get is vilification. On the other hand, Harry Reid argues that the Kochs are really trying to buy elections to advance their corporate interests of lower taxes and less regulation for their oil and gas holdings.
Sure, and I think both could be true. You know, I don't think that those are necessarily mutually exclusive. It's difficult for me to say as I'm a journalist, but you know, definitely a lot of the things they believe in and they personally believe in and they get vilified for are things that would help their companies and their conglomerate.
Well, haven't they paid more than $50 million in fines for violating the Clean Air Act? Is it just a coincidence that Koch Industries has used the think tanks that they have funded, including the Cato Institute and their Mercatus Center, to fight for the removal of that act?
I mean, you would have to talk to people who are studying that particular issue. You know, is it a coincidence? I can't really say for sure because none of them are talking to me. You know, it's one of those situations where I'm calling people and they don't necessarily call me back to say what they're thinking.
Well, the Kochs are libertarians.
In fact,
Charles ran for vice president on the libertarian ticket mm-hmm. at one point. But libertarian seems to mean so many different things today.
Right.
Even Rand Paul and Ron Paul seem to represent different wings of the Libertarian Party. And then the Kochs say they're libertarians, and they had a falling out with the Cato Institute, which they have given a lot of money to, the Cato Institute being another libertarian group. What happened there?
Well, what happened there was they basically wanted the Cato Institute, which they had actually helped start back in the 1970s. And the Cato Institute is a well-respected libertarian think tank that has very adamantly said that it does not want to do politics, right? It doesn't want to get involved in legislative races. It might be libertarian, but that doesn't mean it's going to go out there and buy ads, right? And nor could it, because it's a charity and a think tank. So they basically were led by a man that rejected what the Kochs had wanted to do in certain cases. And some of this animosity had gone back years and years and years. And what happened after it started happening in 2011, 2010, that they had sort of a public split. And Charles Koch very much blamed certain folks at Cato for a very unflattering picture of him that was portrayed in The New Yorker. So according to people we talked to, there was a bit of a, you know, let's find out who was saying these things. There was a lot of anonymous Cato quotes. And it ultimately boiled over into the idea that, like, the Kochs allegedly had asked Cato to do political work in 2012. They had asked them to sort of, you know, provide the intellectual ammunition to groups like Americans for Prosperity to run these political ads. And Cato said no. Cato said, again, we might actually agree with these positions, but we are not going to provide you any ammunition for anything political. It boiled over into a couple lawsuits, and it ended up with getting a different sort of structure for how Cato is controlled, and then also the removal of the man who the Kochs had the problem with at Cato.
I'm speaking with Kim Barker of ProPublica. We're talking about the Koch brothers. I misspoke. It was actually David Koch who ran for vice president on the Libertarian ticket in 1980. He advocated the abolition of Social Security, the FBI, the CIA, and public schools. But the Kochs since have pretty much kept a low profile despite the fact that David Koch's name is on a bunch of buildings, including one at Lincoln Center, and now mm-hmm. he's going to be attached to the front of the Metropolitan Museum, the plaza there. They never do TV interviews. And nearly everyone you spoke to only spoke to you on the condition of anonymity.
Lots of fear.
Are people afraid of them?
Lots of fear. Everybody we talked to was very concerned about being found out. Everybody we talked to did not want their name used. They were very concerned about retribution, even when they were saying the most banal things or even when they were saying positive things about the Koch brothers. There was just a real sense of paranoia there. If you say anything wrong, you could just be taken out.
Isn't there a third Koch brother? Is he political as well?
No, not like this. But yeah, I think there are two other Koch brothers, actually. Yeah,
and they're
They're rich, but they're not like they're not political.
Charles and David are the ones who really took over Coke Industries mm-hmm. and made it into the huge conglomerate that it is today. Mm-hmm. I think I read that they increased its value by over 2,000%.
Yeah, I remember reading that as well.
And some of the companies that they own, people will be surprised. They're in the oil and gas business, but they also have Stainmaster carpet, Lycra fiber, Georgia Pacific paper products, Angel Soft quilted, Northern Soft and Gentle, Brawny Dixie Cup, Sparkle Ultra, Vanity Fair napkins. These are
things everybody has in their home. You know, they're incredibly successful.
In 2012, Coke Industries spent more than $10 million on oil and gas lobbying efforts in Washington, and only two other companies spent more money lobbying than the Cokes, ExxonMobil and Royal Dutch Shell. Since President Obama took office, Coke Industries' lobbying expenditures have more than doubled. So on mm-hmm. top of all of this, they are also going the traditional route of lobbying?
Right. I mean, not unusual for a business to actually lobby to try to get what it wants, but it's and they're very large, so obviously they would have a lot of lobbyists. I think it's the combination of the lobbying and of this sort of dark money group effort politically, then plus the think tanks you were talking about, the whole idea of advocating for ideas like, you know, climate change is a myth, these sort of things. You know, that it added up all together, you've got these two men that are running this vast network of groups, all intended to sort of push what they believe.
One of the largest Coke-affiliated disregarded entities in the last election cycle was one that you mentioned earlier, the Center to Protect Patient Rights. It's no longer active.
It is active, actually. It's still active, but it's not necessarily in the same place inside the Coke network. The man who runs it, Sean Noble, is still running it. He just changed the name, coincidentally, or not coincidentally, a few days after we ran our story. It was the name of it was changed to American Encore.
Now, they also, most of their attention is to Obamacare, but mm-hmm. didn't they also get involved in Arizona's redistricting and also fighting Scott Walker's recall?
Yeah, they gave out money to all these different groups that were doing exactly what you just talked about, active across the country, and this is back in 2012. They gave out about $137 million to these groups that were spending money on the elections. And so they had their hands in California and a couple propositions there. They had their hands in the redistricting effort in Arizona. You know, they were spending money in Wisconsin supporting groups, giving money to a group that bought all these ads supporting Scott Walker and going against the recall. And then at the same time, you have Sean Noble, who runs the group, you know, writing on his blog, check out this ad. This is amazing. If everybody thinks like this in Wisconsin, you know, this is going to be a great day, without saying that his group had actually in full paid for the ad.
How much is Noble responsible for these dark money strategies?
It's unclear how much he's responsible and how much he's just sort of was exercising.
Because he looks like one of the pioneers in this area.
He definitely was a pioneer in terms of like disregarded entities. He started the first one. It's not clear if that's because of the advice of lawyers, but he, I think, is a good microcosm of what's happened after Citizens United. Somebody who came along, you know, got involved in the very beginning, you know, helped sort of every evolution of these groups. He was at the forefront of them. And then he did not do so bad financially. In fact, in 2012, more than one out of every $6 that his group spent went back to Sean Noble's companies. That's a pretty good deal.
Your investigation found that the Center to Protect Patient Rights, I'm quoting, bent state election laws and federal tax rules governing how such groups are supposed to operate.
Yes.
In what ways?
Well, for instance, I'll give you one example. You know, they would give money to groups that then would say that they did not spend money on politics, and when they did spend money on politics, they themselves said they spent no money on politics on their IRS forms, also on their IRS applications, keep maintaining they spend no money on politics when there's no other way of looking at the money but then to figure out that they've spent tens of millions of dollars on politics.
Or is the government afraid to go after them after the the big brouhaha about the IRS going sure. after conservative organizations?
Sure. Their experts I talk to say the IRS is just, they just don't really know what to do at this point. You know, obviously last year there was a huge controversy over whether the IRS was targeting conservative groups, and the IRS in fact apologized for targeting conservative groups, specifically their applications. Since then, the IRS has tried to come up with new rules and their proposed rules right now that would restrict and regulate how these groups can spend money on elections. Those rules are on hold right now. They're not going to take effect before the 2014 election, no matter what.
You note that filings with the FEC showed that conservative dark money groups outspent liberal ones by at least $276 million to $29 million, but it had a little apparent effect in the last election.
Right, right.
So when we talk about all of this mm-hmm. money changing our political system, are we overstating the case?
Well, you have to – money definitely just doesn't change an election. I mean, if you're in any of these states where you have all this money coming in, at a certain point, you're going to get numb by seeing commercial after commercial from these different
groups.
But
don't negative ads, despite the fact that the public says they hate them, don't they really have an impact?
They can have an impact, and I think it depends on the race. But I think the real issue here isn't necessarily the amount of money that's going on, although it is obscene, and it's certainly much more than before. It's the fact that you've got these groups spending anonymous money on elections. In other words, you don't know where the money is coming from. I don't know where the money is coming from. You're going to tell me that the politician who gets elected on the back of this money isn't going to know where the money's coming from? I have a hard time believing that. And so you have a situation that can come up with anonymous money where there's a quid pro quo down the road, and we don't even know what's going on. In the past, at least, we've been able to look at FEC records, and we can see who's giving money, and then we can see who's getting the contract later on. You can make that sort of connection. You can't do that anymore.
Harry Reid and other Senate leaders suggested last week that the Koch brothers are behind congressional Republicans agreeing to support a Ukraine aid package only in exchange for delays in IRS rules that would have an impact on the political activities of nonprofits like Americans for Prosperity.
Yeah, I don't know what his proof is for that. I mean, some of the things Harry Reid says, it's difficult for me to say whether it's true or not. You know, it's intriguing, that's for sure.
So we have this other side of the Koch brothers, mm-hmm. All of their charitable, their philanthropic work, which gets them a lot of positive press. The American Museum of Natural History has a David H. Koch dinosaur wing.
Sure.
The New York State Theater at Lincoln Center, the home to the New York City Ballet, was renamed the David H. Koch Theater after he gave them a gift of $100 million to renovate the building. And as I said, the work is underway for the David H. Koch Plaza in front of the Metropolitan Museum of Art. That seems to be working for them.
Yeah, I mean, they give a lot of money to good causes. I feel like every museum I go to has got, you know, David Koch's name on it somewhere.
Well, it used to be Philip Morris, and the museums right. stopped taking money from Philip Morris because they felt that the tobacco side of that made them look bad. But it's not working with the Kochs. One other interesting thing, their father was a founder of the John Birch Society, which doesn't strike me as a libertarian group.
No. And both David and Charles have distanced themselves from John Birch. And I think we all can't be held accountable for what our parents do. If so, I'd be in trouble. I hope my parents aren't listening to this.
Does it look like dark money is the way it's going to be for a long time?
Yeah, I don't see it changing in the near future. I think it's only going to grow. I think you're going to see the liberals try to get much more involved in dark money. They're already trying to raise money. This new group, Tom Steyer's group out of San Francisco, one of his next-gen climate groups, is a dark money group.
The only other way would be for the Supreme Court to suddenly have a major change of heart.
It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. This is the new normal. And I think that every time I talk to people about it, I just ask, you know, is this the way we want our politics to work? Is this the way you want elections to work?
Kim Barker is a reporter for ProPublica. Thank you so much for being on our show again. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thanks for having me on.
And we've been talking about the Koch brothers and dark money.